From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point.
Electing Joe Biden is just the start of the work ahead of us. And I couldn't be prouder to be by his side, running to represent you, the people.
That's California Senator Kamala Harris yesterday in Delaware in her first official speech as the Democratic candidate for vice president. This hour On Point, the significance of the Biden-Harris ticket. Let's begin this hour in Gainesville, Florida, with Sharon Wright Austin. She's a political science professor at the University of Florida. Her research focuses on American government and African-American politics. Sharon, welcome to On Point. How nice to have you.
Hi, nice to meet you.
And from Washington, Democratic strategist Joel Pain. He's also a CBS News political analyst and the host of Here Comes the Pain podcast. Joel, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you as well.
Hi, Shane. Good to be on with you.
So Joe Biden and Kamala Harris making their first official appearance as running mates yesterday. This was a barrier-breaking moment with Senator Harris, a woman of color, the daughter of immigrants. Sharon, I'll begin with you. What were your thoughts seeing this ticket together?
I was very happy to see that he had selected her. I expected him to select Senator Harris. It was just a very good feeling. I couldn't help but to think of my mother, who is now deceased, and my father as well. They were born in the 1930s and 1940s in Mississippi and lived in a segregated society, and they would have been so, so happy to have lived to have seen this moment happen.
Joel Pain, Vice President Biden interviewed 11 women leaders, as he called them, for the vice president job. What do you think gave Kamala Harris the edge?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Kamala Harris was such a historic nominee for this position, but she really was the most conventional choice from the get-go, I think, because she has a national profile. She ran a major presidential campaign. She's run statewide in a state like California twice successfully. She's got a great personal narrative, and she is a dynamic speaker, somebody who can use her oratory skills to really help execute the Biden message across the country. I think all of those things gave her an advantage, but also the personal chemistry. I noted that in the speech yesterday that both the vice president and also Senator Harris talked about her relationship with Beau Biden and how that binded them together. So I think it really was the perfect storm.
Indeed, Harris checks a lot of the right boxes. She's already been through a vetting process, as you referred to. Of course, she ran in the 2020 Democratic primary. She's not as progressive as Elizabeth Warren, not as moderate as a Susan Rice, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the hour. Let's hear from her first. Here's Kamala Harris speaking about her parents and their commitment to justice yesterday in her speech in Delaware. Here she talks about her mother.
My mother, Shamala, raised my sister Maya and me to believe that it was up to us and every generation of Americans to keep on marching. She'd tell us, don't sit around and complain about things, do something. So I did something. I devoted my life to making real the words carved in the United States Supreme Court, equal justice under law.
Sharon Wright Austin, how has Harris's background shaped her as a person and as a candidate for this particular moment?
She has a very interesting background, as you pointed out, with her being the daughter of immigrants. She grew up in and attended mostly predominantly white schools. She then went to Howard University, which is a historically black college. She was very much involved in campus life. She was an activist even in college. And so this was a moment that, if you know anything about her background, you shouldn't have been surprised to see that she is on the ticket to be vice president and possibly might be the first black female black president. Because if you look back at her background, she has been involved in leadership activities throughout her life. And then later, she attended law school. She had a very successful career. And as the other panelists mentioned, she held statewide office one twice, which is very uncommon for minorities and women because it's very difficult for them to win statewide elections. She ran for president. At first, she was doing well, but she ran into funding problems. So she has the type of, she's pretty much just a complete package. She has the ideology, she has the background, she has the experience. So this is something that's very exciting.
We'll get to her senatorial and her prosecutorial record later on in the broadcast, but I want to hear from Joe Biden first. Here he is yesterday speaking about his running mate, Kamala Harris.
This morning, all across the nation, little girls woke up, especially little black and brown girls, who so often feel overlooked and undervalued in their communities. But today, today, just maybe, they're seeing themselves for the first time in a new way as the stuff of president and vice presidents.
Joe Payne, what does Kamala Harris bring to Joe Biden? And what does she bring to this ticket, to your mind, Joel?
Well, she brings energy. She also brings an appeal to really all the disparate parts of the Democratic coalition. You know, if you're a progressive, you can look at Kamala Harris and see someone that, you know, maybe she doesn't vote or say everything that you agree with all the time, but she's progressive enough. If you're a moderate, you can see somebody who can appeal to you. If you're an African-American woman, a college-educated woman in the suburbs, a woman living in the city who's raising a young family, her personal narrative and her career and her life intersect through all of those different constituencies within the Democratic Party. I'd also say, too, she demonstrated yesterday that she can do the most important job that a vice presidential nominee has to do, deliver a message against the current administration. She delivered a fiery and on-point rebuke of the Trump administration, particularly their response to coronavirus. And I think beyond all the pomp and circumstance and the excitement of the last 48 hours, that might be the thing that the Biden folks are most excited about.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Here is President Trump reacting to the announcement that Kamala Harris is the Democratic vice presidential nominee.
I was more surprised than anything else because she did so poorly. Many people did much better than her in the primaries. She did very poorly in the primaries. And that's like a poll.
Sharon Wright Austin, President Trump, besides what he said there, he called Senator Harris a risky pick this week. He referred to, quote, horrible things she's said about Joe Biden. The president also called Senator Harris nasty, a word he has used previously to describe women who challenge him. Sharon, it seems that the Biden camp understands that on some level, Senator Harris really gets under the president's skin.
I think so, but I think that it isn't so much Senator Harris. I think that President Trump has had confrontations with several women. And I think that if Joe Biden had chosen anyone other than Senator Harris, he would have had the same type of conflict. I think when I listened to his speech, I thought about the fact that he mostly is just already campaigning. And he's trying to say the things that he needs to say to try to discredit her because the polls are showing that he's behind. So I wasn't really surprised at all to hear the comments that he made. It wasn't shocking at all.
Joel Payne, Harris came right out of the gates swinging hard at Donald Trump. What did you make of the president's response so far, just day two here?
I mean, I think what we've seen a lot of reporting of is that the president's team appeared to be taken aback or almost off balance, which is surprising considering the fact that Senator Harris was somebody who was thought to be a front runner from the beginning. She is not easily caricatured. Both because of her personal narrative, because of her impressive career, but also politically, you can't position Kamala Harris as some, you know, wild-eyed progressive that's way to the left of the mainstream. She's right in the middle of the Democratic Party, just like Joe Biden. And I think that's probably why the president's team is struggling. Of course, he's going to result to some of the nasty insults that we heard him use against Hillary Clinton, who I worked for 4 years ago. He's going to reprise that playbook and probably try to do the same thing. I also think beyond just the Biden-Harris ticket, you look at some of the president's other tactics. He, you know, brought up the whole issue of the suburbs and, you know, suburban housewives and was pretty direct about making it a racial issue in some of his media appearances around that. So it's pretty clear that the president and his team have not settled on a message. And I think they're going to throw the whole kitchen sink and it's going to be ugly. And it's going to be painful, particularly for a lot of Americans and a lot of groups of Americans who have felt ostracized by this White House to begin with.
Well, to that point, you mentioned working on the Clinton campaign, and it's interesting to note that the Harris announcement comes 1 month later than the Tim Kaine announcement came with Hillary Clinton 4 years ago. Certainly shortens the window of attack time on the candidate, I would guess you would say, Joel.
Jane, that's such a good point. And I actually think Joe Biden has really benefited from time this time around. I think, you know, nobody is happy about what's going on with coronavirus, but I think the unintended benefit for the Biden campaign, it really has shortened the campaign season. It's shortened the need for him to be doing rope lines and doing these, you know, long speeches and getting in front of rallies of 20,000 people. This moment and you know, this election cycle that we're in, really actually does play to Joe Biden's benefit. And I think that being able to name a VP candidate a month later, you're right, it does shorten the attack window. We know they're going to turn anybody that Joe Biden would have picked into a boogeyman. And I think they're going to try to do the same thing with Kamala Harris. But as I said before, I think she's a little bit harder to box in.
So to that point, Sharon Wright Austin, just watching them yesterday, typically when a VP candidate is announced, there's a big rally, hundreds of supporters, there's confetti and balloons. It was such a different scene yesterday when Harris and Biden appeared together for the first time in an empty high school gymnasium, Sharon. It's such a sign of the times and history making in its own way, Sharon.
Exactly. Because of the pandemic, it's changed a lot of things during this campaign season. And as you mentioned, in previous years, it would have been the announcement would have been made in front of a very large audience, in front of thousands of cheering supporters. But unfortunately, because of the pandemic, things had to be different this year. But I do find that social media has been very active. And so even though people are not able to really come together in rallies, both of the candidates are doing a lot of campaigning through social media.
Well, a lot of campaigning and a lot of fundraising, Joel Payne. The Biden campaign raised $26 million in the first 24 hours after the VP announcement of Harris. That's a single-day fundraising record with 150,000 first-time contributors. What does that indicate to you, Joel?
It's a significant number. You know, money is so interesting in politics. I think we're at a point now where both sides are going to raise enough money to be competitive. But what it really is an indicator of is energy. And I think what that shows you is that the Biden campaign has a lot of energy at its back, and Senator Harris helps support that.
We are discussing Kamala Harris's historic candidacy for vice president this hour. Up next, we'll look at her record and more with Sharon Wright Austin, professor of political science at the University of Florida, and Joel Payne, Democratic strategist, CBS News political analyst. Much more to come, listeners. Stick with us. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the historic selection of Senator Kamala Harris joining Joe Biden on the Democratic presidential ticket. With me this hour, Sharon Austin, political science professor at the University of Florida, and Democratic strategist Joel Payne. I want to bring in another voice to the conversation now. Angela Peoples is a progressive organizer, activist, and strategist. She's the director of the organizing collective Black Women Four. Angela, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So the VP stakes started with Kamala Harris pretty much being the favorite, I would say, ended with her being the pick. What's your reaction to this announcement?
I think that I agree with the other panelists that this is it made a lot of sense, this pick for Joe Biden. I'm certainly not surprised, and I think that Senator Harris definitely adds to the ticket, and it was a good choice for him. I do think that my question to the Biden team and the Biden-Harris ticket is what is their strategy to engage parts of the base that won't be excited and parts of the Democratic base that's going to be necessary to turn out in November. We saw throughout last year and even the beginning of this year a very active and progressive segment of the party really turning out for candidates like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And this pick, Senator Harris, well, it does speak to some of the Black voters that chose Joe Biden and Black voters who are very much at the core of this base. There's a broader aspect of the Black community and the Democratic community that I don't think will be as energized by this choice. And so I think it's on the Biden and the Harris ticket to really show that that community or that aspect of the party is going to be welcome in on their ticket.
So it's a really important point, then, this very real tension between the moderate and the progressive wings of the Democratic Party. So answer your own question. How do you engage and appeal to the more progressive Democrats out there?
Well, I think one very important step is to be very active and engage on the this effort around police brutality. Defunding the police was a cry, a call to action that we heard echoed by thousands in the streets this summer. And given Joe Biden's record being the architect of the 94 crime bill that really entrenched the mass incarceration system that is devastating Black communities and brown communities across the country, and Senator Harris's record as a prosecutor, it's going to be very important that they take very active steps to reach out to leaders that have been fighting for not just reforming the criminal justice system, but completely really dismantling in a way that actually puts resources into the communities that, that can stop gun violence and that can actually make our communities safer and not just double down on failed, you know, police reforming tactics that we know don't work. And I think that there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of engagement, there's a lot of movements and leaders that the Biden and Harris ticket can be working with to not just show in speeches or in rhetoric, but actually in policies that they adopt into their platform, mm-hmm. that will really be an indication that they are prepared to make that shift and really right some of the wrongs that, frankly, particularly Joe Biden, I think are at his footsteps when it comes to the experience of mass incarceration and criminalization of Black communities. This country, there's a lot for them to do, and I know myself and other activists are really looking to them to take leadership in reaching out to those communities to make sure that that effort is lifted up, mm-hmm. and that momentum doesn't just show up with a Black woman at the top of the ticket, but that it actually shows up as significant transformative policies that are going to be necessary.
Yeah. So beyond that engagement, what challenges do you see Kamala Harris facing within the party and outside of the party? Can she appeal to independent voters, do you think, for example?
I think, you know, we've seen what some of the challenges have been coming from other Democrat reports of other Democrats as Joe Biden was making his decision, you know, relying on, you know, sort of racist and sexist tropes. Talking about how an ambitious woman or someone being ambitious, someone like Kamala Harris being ambitious.
Angela, are you there? I think we lost her on a cell phone. Angela Peoples, thank you very much for your time. I'm so sorry we couldn't finish the conversation with you, but you make some good points, and I appreciate you being part of the broadcast today. Angela Peoples, Director of the Progressive Organizing Collective, Black Woman 4. Let me go back to Joel Payne and Sharon Wright Austin here. To Angela's point, Joel, let's start with you. What do you make of Kamala Harris's need to sort of engage, one wing, this sort of progressive wing of the Democratic Party?
Well, I think what you heard there is the tension point in the party, and it's really what we saw teased out over the fall and last summer over the Democratic presidential choice primary. And I think a lot of that was litigated. And despite the fact that there is a lot of energy from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, so far, what is borne out is that the winning coalitions in the Democratic Party tend to come from the middle, from the center. That said, I think the Biden campaign has been very smart and strategic. They've pulled in folks that have bona fides in that community, folks like the chief of staff for Kamala Harris, for instance, Karine Jean-Pierre, a former colleague of mine, who will be her chief of staff and who is an Obama veteran and is somebody who's worked with MoveOn.org, for example, right? They've brought in those people. They also, with their economic plan that they just released last month, they consulted very closely with Senator Elizabeth Warren and her staff. Senator Warren and Vice President Biden have become very close in the previous 4 to 6 months. Hmm. So I think they're doing the things that you need to do at the grassroots level to build trust and to earn trust, but there's clearly a lot more work that needs to be done.
Let me bring now into the conversation Anthony Brooks, Eyes on Point's 2020 political correspondent. Anthony, great to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Jane. Good to be with you.
So to that point, let me ask you about this notion of engaging the left flank of the party. The Trump campaign wants to say that Joe Biden is sort of a puppet of the radical left, that Kamala Harris is a radical lefty. And in campaign ads already, the Trump team is referring to Biden-Harris as, quote, two of the most radical, the nation's most radical Democrats. But isn't it true, Anthony, that Kamala Harris really has had to defend her own record as a prosecutor during the campaign? The Bernie Sanders wing of the party, the progressive Democrats, have been very critical of Harris. They have not embraced her, Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. And I think what's going to be, I mean, what I'm most interested in watching in the weeks ahead here, I don't think Kamala Harris did a great job during her presidential campaign and sort of sorting through her record as a prosecutor and California's top cop. And there are progressives who faulted her on a number of things. I mean, for example, her being unwilling to prosecute police misconduct in California and being too timid in her proposals around police reform. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, since the killing of George Floyd, the police killing of George Floyd, she's emerged as a key advocate for change and reform. She marched with protesters. She pushed for making lynching a federal crime, and she's called for other kinds of reform. But it will be interesting to see to what extent she can sort of sort through the complicated record she has as California's top cop.
So,
and in terms of, yeah, go ahead, Jane.
Well, let me bring Sharon Austin into this on that point, Anthony, because Sharon, you know, as Anthony said, Harris has spent months defending her record as a prosecutor in San Francisco, specifically on this criminal justice reform platform. She opposed a bill in California to ensure independent investigations of police using fatal force, among other things. Sharon, is this an issue for her now, especially in this moment of racial reckoning in this country?
This is an issue for her within the Democratic Party, especially with progressive voters. But one of the things that the Biden-Harris ticket has to its benefit is the fact that they've been endorsed by other progressive candidates like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. But this is something that she is going to have to account for. But the good thing also for her is that she already has run in the Democratic primary. And during that time, she was questioned during debates about her record. And she talked about the way that her views have evolved. And another thing that she has to her benefit is her progressive record as a U.S. senator. She has voted in sort of a progressive type of way. So that's something that she can use to her advantage. But unfortunately for politicians, especially for those who've been in office for a longer period of time, which isn't really the case with her, but they have things in their record that they have to answer for. And sometimes it's much better even to have a less experienced political candidate running for office than someone who's been in office for a long time. Because if you've been in office for a long time, you're bound to have done several things or taken several positions that have been unpopular. And so to answer your question, yes, that is going to be something that some of the more progressive members of the Democratic Party are not going to accept her explanations, because during her career as California Attorney General and during the time that she was there, she did have some positions that some people are very troubled by.
Joel Payne, speak to that point. How do you see the implications of Harris's prosecutorial record, specifically with regard to criminal justice reform?
They are undoubtedly a challenge. I think to Anthony's point, look, she did have some trouble with that on the campaign trail. Explaining that and coming to grips with that. I think to Sharon's point, one of the advantages of Senator Harris's record is that it's not quite as deep at the federal level. And she, at least in my view, took a pretty marked effort in the last 6 months, particularly since she dropped out of the presidential campaign, to really try to firm up some of her relationships with progressives, to signal and to do the things that you need to do to appeal to those folks. But really and truly, what's interesting to me is the reason why she was chosen is the very reason that we're talking here. And it's because she's not a progressive. She's not a lefty. Yeah. The whole issue of the Trump campaign having a hard time boxing her in, like, that is the, yes, it's a challenge for her in the left flank of the Democratic Party. It is also what makes her, or what made her the most attractive candidate for the Biden team to add her to the ticket. So that's the tension.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Anthony Brooks, back to you. Just on one other point about her record, Harris has been wobbly, right, on some policy issues like Medicare. At first, she backed Medicare for All, and then she distanced herself from it. Help us understand some of those positions.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, if you recall during the during her campaign, she was first for Medicare for All and then sort of backed off. She made a statement about wanting to do away with all private health insurance. That got her into a little bit of trouble. So, yeah, I think wobbly's a good word. But to follow up on Joel's point, I mean, what I find really interesting about Biden selecting Kamala Harris is it makes a lot of sense for the campaign right now, because in a way she amplifies in a positive way for Joe Biden, who Joe Biden is politically. I mean, centrist, pragmatic, you know, giving Trump a kind of difficult challenge and pinning her down, he can't credibly claim that she's a radical lefty. But I think what this does is, if Joe Biden wins in November, it sort of postpones that reckoning within the Democratic Party, that sort of intramural fight that is inevitably going to happen between the progressive wing of the party. It's probably better for Joe Biden that it not happen while he's running for president. Mm-hmm. But if he becomes president, there's going to be this reckoning, you know, between the Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren wing of the party and Joe Biden. I mean, right now, Biden and people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are doing a lot to help Joe Biden. But if Elizabeth Warren stays in the Senate, for example, and that's another part of the discussion we can have, she'll be in this interesting position of not only supporting Biden, but also holding his feet to the fire on progressive issues. And that's going to be a really interesting reckoning within the Democratic Party.
And to be go ahead, Joel.
I was just going to say, Jane, I think that's such a great point by Anthony. And this pick was as much about 2024 and 2028 as it was about 2020. It really does set the trend lines for the Democratic Party for the next decade. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Biden, let's say Joe Biden won, and maybe he was a one-term president, if Kamala Harris faced a primary running for the presidency in 2024. There is some, Angela, I think, really gave voice to a lot of that energy on the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. But progressives are kind of tired of waiting and being told to wait one election cycle. I actually think that Anthony's absolutely right, that this temporarily delays a real fight within the Democratic Party for the soul of the party.
Sharon Austin, do you agree with that?
I agree with it completely. I think that, for one thing, I think that the party is going to come together simply because of their disliking for President Trump and their disapproval of him. But nevertheless, she's going to have to really clarify her views, and she really is going to have to appeal to all of the members of the Democratic Party.
And to add to that, I mean, Team Biden and Democrats can talk a lot about these issues and the differences and the progressives and the moderates. But at the end of the day, Anthony Brooks, they want to keep this election squarely as a referendum on Donald Trump. Do they not?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think this point was made earlier in the hour, but by Joel. I mean, I think what they did yesterday really effectively, I mean, it's early times, right? They've had one appearance and one speech together. But I thought Kamala Harris sort of presented herself yesterday as that sort of prosecuting voice for the open and shut case against the Trump administration. And that's clearly where they want to keep the focus. And you saw them signal that and sort of begin that case yesterday, so far pretty effectively, I think.
Here's a clip from the Democratic debate last summer where Senator Kamala Harris targeted Joe Biden over his record against federally mandated efforts to integrate public schools in the 1970s. Here's that part of that exchange.
Do you agree today that you were wrong to oppose busing in America then?
No,
do you agree?
I did not oppose busing in America. What I opposed is busing ordered by the Department of Education. That's what I opposed.
Well,
I
there
did
was
not
a failure of states to integrate public schools in America. I was part of the second class to integrate Berkeley, California public schools almost two decades after Brown v. Board of Education.
Because your city council made that decision. It was a local decision.
So that's where the federal government must step in.
Joel Payne, such an interesting interaction on so many levels. Are there issues that these two don't see eye to eye on, Biden and Harris?
Oh, absolutely. But that's nothing new for national, you know, for tickets. Yeah. I mean, George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan were barely talking when Ronald Reagan tapped him as the vice president in 1980. I think that Clinton and Gore, nobody thought they were best friends in 1992. I think really you look at Obama and Biden, they were former rivals in 2008. So this is historically something that has happened. I think what's interesting about that exchange to me is the fact that while there were clearly a lot of Biden allies within the campaign that were bothered by that, I actually think the former vice president himself appreciated that Kamala Harris went after him and demonstrated the thing that you need to do as the number two on a ticket, which is to be able to effectively deliver a counterpunch, which she did. And I actually think that that was probably part of the reason why the former vice president chose her as opposed to working against her.
Anthony, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, I appreciate what Joel says. I mean, I'm also aware that Jill Biden, for example, described that as a gut punch. I mean, I know that there were people close to Biden, including his wife, who were really upset by that. And it did seem like a sort of, you know, obviously orchestrated kind of
moment,
a sneak attack on him. So I don't know how I feel about that, but I think it shows that Biden understands the rough and tumble nature of politics. He's certainly a seasoned veteran in that regard.
We are discussing Senator Kamala Harris and the way forward for Democrats in the 2020 presidential race with Anthony Brooks, Joel Payne, and Sharon Wright Austin. More to come after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. Tomorrow is our weekly news roundtable, and we want to know what's on your mind. How has the holdup on the new stimulus package impacted your life? How does Joe Biden's choice of Senator Kamala Harris for his running mate make you feel? Do you live in a state that had a primary this week? How did voting go for you? Tell us your stories and send us your questions for our panelists at 617-353-0683. I'm here today with a great political panel to guide us through the significance of the Kamala Harris candidacy for vice president. Sharon Austin is a political science professor at the University of Florida. Joel Payne is a Democratic strategist, and Anthony Brooks, On Point 2020 political correspondent. I mentioned earlier in the broadcast President Trump's response to Kamala Harris and this pick this week. He called her many things, including nasty and mean and horrible and disrespectful. I wanted to play this clip from Susan Rice, the former U.N. ambassador and national security advisor, who was also on Joe Biden's vice presidential shortlist. She congratulated Senator Harris on Tuesday and had this warning about attacks that are to come.
There will be those that employ racism and sexism. Look at Donald Trump yesterday, you know, calling her nasty. He would have done that to any person that Joe Biden selected on the ticket. And that's the undertone. They're those who will not retreat from that kind of divisiveness and hatred. And Donald Trump exemplifies it.
Anthony Brooks, speak to this point, to Susan Rice's sort of warning about what's to come.
Well, yeah, I mean, what we've seen is so far the White House sort of struggling in a way to come up with an attack against Kamala Harris. I mean, as we've discussed, it's kind of difficult to cast her as this radical left person who's, you know, co-opting Joe Biden and going to sort of drag him back to Cuba or Russia or wherever it is. I mean, it just doesn't wash with her record. But clearly, it's going to get really nasty. And I think, as we've already pointed out, there have been attacks already on her and on the Biden-Harris ticket that, you know, this is bad for the suburbs because, you know, they're going to do God knows what to the suburbs. And that's an obvious appeal with racist undertones about sort of white suburban fears of a changing America. So I think all of that is gonna come and more. And so I think Susan Rice is correct. And I think it would have come no matter who Joe Biden picked.
Yeah. Joel Payne, to that suburb strategy, a lot of analysts talking about the Biden campaign's sort of suburbs, you know, strategy, and certainly Trump tweeting yesterday, the suburban housewife will be voting for me. Your thoughts on the president's Twitter feed and seeming to confirm that assumption?
Well, it's problematic on a couple levels. I mean, morally, obviously, I don't have to spend much time on how problematic it is. Strategically, I think it's off. For starters, we know that college-educated women have been really turned off by Donald Trump. And I think a lot of those suburban women, there's a lot of crossover there with that population. Also, we're in a moment in time in American history, in recent American history, where I actually think that the allegiances are kind of getting mixed up in a way that the president and his team might be a cycle or two behind on. If you go around suburbs around the country, many of those houses, yeah, they have American flags. They also have Black Lives Matter flags or posters in their window. And I don't know if the kind of, you know, rank, frankly, bigoted approaches that maybe the president has been able to rely on in the past, I don't think that they're going to have the same effect. Also, that's pretty peaked to come to this early in the cycle. That's a really high level of rhetoric to get to in August. I don't know where else you can go if you're basically accusing the other side of some of these kind of nefarious things. So I don't know where the president and his team can go. I'm sure they can, you know, reach deeper into their arsenal of tactics, but it feels like the president and his team are just reaching right now. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing that reflected in his polling numbers.
Sharon Wright Austin, what are you seeing down in Florida where you are?
I'm seeing that he referred to suburban housewives and the fact that they will vote for him. Well, I'm a suburban, not a housewife, but a suburban wife who lives in a racially mixed community. And I'm seeing sort of a mixture of things. I mean, some of my neighbors are Trump supporters, but some of my neighbors are Biden supporters. And so when he uses language like suburban housewives, he's talking about conservative white women. And those women will vote for him. And it's been proven that they are among the strongest members of his base. But there are other suburban wives who are women of color, and also suburban wives, even who are white women, who aren't going to support him because they don't really agree with his positions. And then another thing that I hope we get a chance to talk to, but I want to mention a little bit about the type of campaigning. I think we all are kind of bracing ourselves for a really ugly campaign season. And we know that it's going to be very ugly because we have a very outspoken president who says things publicly that other presidents would never have said. But I think the thing is, this election is going to give a lot of implications for future presidential elections. If President Trump wins, then it'll send a clear message that that type of campaigning style kind of works. But if he loses, it'll send a message also that people are tired of seeing that type of politics. So this is going to be a very important election considering the changing demographics in our country. And it's going to really set the stage for future elections in terms of the way that people run for president.
Well, it's hard to replicate to that point the kind of electricity that historically comes in these moments, Anthony. How can you gin up the excitement in the days after a big announcement like this? I mean, Kamala Harris, she's an exuberant campaigner. She's also a pretty good social media candidate, kind of hip and cool, right? I mean, how do you get creative to sort of run a campaign in this environment?
Boy, it's a great question, and I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that. But, I mean, I think one of the big questions for the Biden Harris ticket is to what extent they can really harness the kind of explosive energy we've seen in the demonstrations following the killing of George Floyd. I mean, I was struck today that two liberal groups, the Working Families Party and the Center for Popular Democracy Action, these are groups that supported Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and they've said that they're supporting the Biden-Harris ticket, but it was a tempered endorsement, saying, you know, they see this as the best way to beat Donald Trump, and of course that's what they want to do. But here's a quote I want to read Jennifer Epps Addison. She's the president of the Center for Popular Democracy. She says it's not a given that all of those millions of people who have taken to the streets for transforming our criminal justice system will turn around and go vote for Joe Biden. That to us represents a real threat. Hmm. So in terms of ginning up the excitement and the support for this for this ticket, that represents, I think, a big challenge and something that'll be really interesting to watch.
And Joel Payne, to Anthony's earlier point about progressive like Senator Elizabeth Warren, if she stays in the Senate, sort of keeping Joe Biden's feet to the fire if he were to be elected on progressive issues. I mean, there's going to be a real pull, a real push and pull on Joe Biden on these platforms.
There will be. You know, I worked in the last Senate that Democrats had 60 votes. I was a member of Senator Harry Reid's staff when he was the majority leader back in the first 2 years of the Obama term. And I can tell you that as exciting as that is to kind of have that kind of governing mandate, it's also tough to keep your caucus together. And I can tell you, if Joe Biden is successful this November, he will have a short time where he can be very excited about being the new president. And then he will realize that now, instead of the fire coming from the other side of the political field, there's going to come from within the party. It's really hard to keep order when you have a big tent party like that. By definition, if you have a big tent, you're going to have a lot of competing interests and a lot of competing voices. One thing really quickly on what Sharon said earlier, which I think is absolutely right. Yes, the president is playing good base politics to excite his base, but we've never seen a president running for re-election that cares nothing about expanding his base. Donald Trump has done nothing to add new votes. Yes, I'm sure people who voted for Donald Trump last time might feel good about what he's done. But really, elections at this point in time, when you're trying to win re-election, are about addition, not subtraction. And I don't think the president has really built addition into the equation. I don't see where he's reached out. Even Barack Obama in 2012 tried to add moderate Republicans talking about the deficit and things like that. Ronald Reagan tried to add people in 84. Donald Trump has no interest in doing that.
Sharon Wright.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, go ahead, Anthony.
Jane, if I can just add to that, because, you know, talk about Joe Biden, it's just the opposite. I mean, he's done something really interesting, bringing in Bernie Sanders people and setting up these task forces to put together policy proposals. He's worked really closely with Elizabeth Warren and actually adopted some of her policy proposals on student debt forgiveness, for example, and an increase of Social Security payments, among some other stuff. So while Joel's talking about Donald Trump doing nothing to expand his base of support, Joe Biden is at least made a credible effort to do that. And I find that really, really interesting. It's also an interesting contrast to how effective Hillary Clinton was 4 years ago in terms of reaching out to Bernie Sanders supporters. And I would argue that Biden's doing a much, much better job at trying to expand that base of support that he wants to rely on.
Do you agree with that, Sharon?
I agree that completely. Even the selection of Senator Harris as a running mate is an attempt to try to show that he is trying to reach out to independents. He's trying to reach out to moderate voters and both moderate Republicans and also moderate Democrats. And I agree completely that Senator Biden is really doing a lot to try to expand his base. He wants to try to keep the core Democratic base together, but he also is trying to attract support from independents and also from Republicans who may have voted for President Trump last time but are no longer satisfied with him and are looking for an alternative. So I think that he really has done a lot to try to expand his base.
Let me turn for a moment to the upcoming vice presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence. What are you looking for? Joel Payne, we'll start with you. We've seen Senator Harris's prosecutorial skills on display many times, including during the Kavanaugh hearings for the Supreme Court. What are you looking for, Joel?
It's contrast. And really, when you're talking about these debates, there are opportunities to show contrast. I actually think if we really kind of pan back, we look at most recent debates, there aren't a ton of memorable moments. You know, remember Donald Trump kind of leering behind Hillary Clinton. We remember Joe Biden and Sarah Palin kind of having awkward exchanges in their debates. But really, are most people thinking about that in the voting booth? I'd suggest not. I think what they are for is forwarding a narrative. And I think what the Biden campaign is going to really try to do is forward this narrative of this didn't have to be this way. You know, Kamala Harris talked about that yesterday. She's going to talk about the contrast and how she would govern and Joe Biden would govern versus how Mike Pence and Donald Trump have governed. And I think she's going to be a very effective salesperson, you know, pardon the vernacular, but she's going to be very good at making that case to the American people. And I think Mike Pence is going to probably double down on appealing to those conservatives and those evangelical Republicans that have been so important to the Trump-Pence base over the 4 years that they've been in office.
Sharon Wright-Austin, how are you looking at it?
I think that one of her greatest strengths is her ability as a debater, and she showed that when she was running for president. But I think the most important debates are going to be among President Trump and Joe Biden, because the Trump campaign has already put information out there and tried to make voters think that Joe Biden doesn't have the mental capacity to serve, or that maybe that physically he is not capable of serving. A lot of people have focused on his advanced age. And so I think that the debates between Biden and Trump are going to be a lot more important than the debates among Harris and Pence, in the sense that Joe Biden is going to be able to prove that he can debate, that he doesn't just have to read from a teleprompter, which is what he's been accused of.
Anthony Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I think the debate that matters is going to be the presidential debate. That said, I think a caution for the Democrats, for Kamala Harris, is already there's just a lot of anticipation that because she's such a good debater and such a tough sort of interrogator and prosecutor, that she's going to mop the floor with Mike Pence. And I think by raising expectations like that, Democrats could end up being disappointed. And it's also true that historically, vice presidential debates aren't remembered for very much. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, Lloyd Benson taking on Dan Quayle, mm-hmm. and sort of that great line, you know, you were no Jack Kennedy. And it just, you know, it was sensational. But there aren't very many of those moments that I can think of beyond that debate. So we might be giving, at this point, too much attention to the prospect of a vice presidential debate. But it'll be interesting to watch no matter what.
And so next week, the Democratic nominations will happen in a virtual convention. What can we expect with that, Joel Payne? Give us a preview.
Well, I think we're going to hear, and what we actually started to hear yesterday is really Democrats start to lay out the case against Donald Trump in a very organized fashion, but also demonstrate their version of America. You know, I've heard a lot of Democrats talk about, well, he should roll out his cabinet and things of that nature. And I don't agree with that. But I do think what Joe Biden wants to do, and I think that convention next week is going to do this, is show this is how I see America. I see Kamala Harris as a part of my America. I see people like Tammy Duckworth. I see people who are of different races and ethnicities, a part of my America. And I think you're going to see that theme beaten into the ground with the Democratic convention. And I imagine you'll see a slightly different message the following week at the Republican convention. Mm.
Let me circle back in our final minute here to this historic choice of Kamala Harris. It cannot be overstated. I remember 12 years ago, we all do, Sarah Palin introduced on the Republican ticket with John McCain a generation back in 1984, when it was Geraldine Ferraro with Walter Mondale. Kamala Harris is only the third woman on a major party vice presidential ticket. Sharon Austin, this is a barrier that hasn't been broken yet. And I still say, given what we know about sexism and racism in this country, in some ways it is a risky choice. Do you think America's ready?
I think America has been ready for a very, very long time. The United States is far behind other countries that have already elected female presidents and women in other positions of leadership. And even though we have women in positions of leadership in this country, it's not on the same level as countries that are thought to be not as progressive or as advanced as we are. So I think that America is definitely ready. And I think that in this case, we should focus on the historical significance of this, with her being a woman of color and her having her immigrant background. But also, I think the main thing is that she is qualified. And so I want to make sure that when we have all these discussions about her race and gender, that we don't forget that, because that's the most important fact.
Anthony Brooks, I'll give you the last word. How will we remember this historical moment?
It's going to be really interesting. And what I'm looking forward to seeing is to what extent Kamala Harris can really create the kind of excitement that she was able to do when she launched her own her own presidential campaign. 20,000 people showed up. She's good at that. Will she be able to sort of encourage that kind of passion and power in the weeks ahead? It'll be interesting to watch.
Anthony Brooks, thanks so much, as always.
My pleasure.
Joel Payne, Democratic strategist, host of the Here Comes the Payne podcast. Joel, thank you.
Pleasure to be with you.
And Sharon Wright Austin from the University of Florida. Sharon, always great to have you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.